Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 14 of the Golf Shake Podcast. A very special one that we're going to be talking about the first major of the year. Matt, the Masters happened yesterday. We're talking to you here. It's Easter Monday. Yes, we're putting in the hours. We've come back on a bank holiday just to obviously inform you about what's gone on. Should you have been living in a hole for the last 4 days, about what's gone on at Augusta National, Matt. Obviously, you've watched loads of it. I've watched loads of it. How did you find it?
Yes. Okay. No, do you know, it's a funny one because obviously I enjoyed it. I love the Masters. I don't know, this year maybe a little bit stop-start.
The weather was awful, wasn't it? I mean, the conditions were poor. It made the course play quite difficult at times, but also fairly easy at times as well. Yeah, so it kind of yielded a few birdies for a few guys who were aggressive, but also, you know, I mean, some of the wind and some of the conditions that they played in, particularly on sort of Friday and early Saturday, were absolutely horrible. Yeah. And it was very, very difficult. And, you know, we'll get on to Rahm in a minute, but he's actually played in some of the worst conditions, hasn't he, over the course of the 4 days. And some of those guys will have been unlucky and got on the wrong side of the draw and played themselves out of it. And it's a tough golf course at the best of times. And you know, we hear people talking every year about what your average golfer would shoot around Augusta National, but even the best players in the world have struggled massively with not just the golf course but the conditions as well. But I actually quite liked the fact that it was a bit like that. I mean, it was rubbish from a point of view that some nights you didn't have any golf to watch, but I saw that tweet or social media post you put out where you said to your wife, should we watch a movie tonight? And she's like, no, do you want to watch the Masters? No, I'll spend the night with you, knowing full well that it'd been called off. But yeah, that was inspired, Matt. Absolutely love that.
I'm sure I wasn't the only one that was doing that, by the way.
Not at all.
I can't be.
But
I quite like the winning score. I think 12 under for four rounds of golf is pretty decent. I think it looks a little bit, you know, him, John Rahm, obviously everybody knows that John Rahm is the 2023 Masters champ. He won by four shots. It felt a lot closer than that to start with. And I think I'd like to have seen, you know, maybe one or two others getting a little bit closer to him. But he looked pretty comfortable, didn't he? I think from kind of start to finish in the final rounds, to be fair.
I mean, I'm sure he wasn't. I'm sure inside it was very, very difficult.
And that tee shot on the 18th, by the way.
Oh, that was kind of horrible, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, we've all been there and hit a 100-yard tee shot with a driver, haven't we? I mean, some of you, that's a good tee shot. But, I mean, the
that was very close to the shaft, I think.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a lot of pressure. He had a four-shot lead, for God's sake. I mean, he could have literally lost that ball and still won. So
And actually, do you know what? Lesson in course management, because he still just played it up to a good number, didn't he?
And he played a provisional. A lot of people wouldn't have done that. And then maybe have had to go back again. And then the nerves do come in and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he had the sense, stood on the tee to hit another golf ball, probably knowing that he didn't really need it. I think he just wanted to get that bad swing out of his head as much as anything. Of course. You know, I think from the tee, you could probably see the guy with the big yellow flag telling you where the ball was, but he thought, no, do you know what? I'm going to hit this and get that horrible shot I've just hit out of my system. And he hit a great tee shot, didn't he? The second one he's hit, just literally nice cut, the one he was trying to hit, middle of the fairway.
And standard.
But yeah, I mean, he's obviously made four. I also think that third shot he's hitting, he was not trying to play that. I mean, it's landed just short of the flag. I mean, that shot there into that green is a 10, 15 feet past the flag shot all day long, isn't it? And just let it come back down the hill. Who cares? He hit it to like three and a half, 4 feet and knocked it in. So, yeah. You know, some days things like that happen for you, don't they? You know, you can get away with a couple of bad ones. I mean, that one, that tee shot landed in the trees and shooting back out, albeit 100 yards off the tee pretty much, was still in no trouble, was it? You know, he didn't have to like thread it through any trees and mess about or do anything like that. It was a fairly straightforward layup, wasn't it? And, you know, he was thinking he was going to make five, but ended up making four. So well done. And you know, we're not saying, well, I'm not saying in any way that it was a lucky kind of finish, because it wasn't. He literally dominated that last sort of probably 27 holes, really. I mean, he just literally was flawless. Did he make one bogey in that stretch? Something like that. There was not many mistakes, and it just looked very, very easy for him, even though it wasn't. I think Brooks helped him a bit in the way that he kind of lost his rhythm and lost his swing a little bit for probably about a stretch of 18 holes from the middle of the third round to the sort of middle of the fourth round, kind of really struggled a little bit. But take nothing away from John Rahm. That was an excellent performance, and I'm sure, you know, a very, very popular winner with many of you, certainly myself.
Yeah, definitely. He seems like he's one of the good guys, and he seems to say the right things and comes across very well, speaks very well. You know, I know that he's had a reputation for being a bit of a hothead in the past, but I don't mind that personally. I think it shows that people want it. It shows that people care.
He's a passionate guy, isn't he? He's got a bit of flair to him, and you know, he's a big, strong guy as well, which is, you know, very un-Spanish, I would say. Of, you know, if we look at some of those great Spanish players of the last 20, 30 years, your Jimenez, your Olazabals, your Seves, Garcias, they're quite slight, tiny little guys, aren't they, that are just got great short games and put fantastic and probably a bit crooked off the tee. I mean, he has got everything. I mean, he hits it amazing off the tee, apart from the 18th yesterday. But hits it great off the tee. He's got loads of power. He's got an awesome short game, and he puts great. And he's a big, strong boy as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him.
No, and I mean,
he reminds me of you.
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, just with the he's won $14 million this year already, and I have won zero. So so yeah, nothing like me. But yeah, I mean, he's a very good player. And for those of you that, you know, you'll see his golf swing and you'll think it's a little bit kind of different to a lot of players that you see who, you know, are very picturesque, the kind of Rorys of this world whose swings look amazing. I actually think John Rahm's is a better golf swing functionally than his. It's in such a good position at the top that he just turns through it and it's square pretty much all the time, and he just rips at it, doesn't he? And knows he's going to hit that little cut all the time, and he's owned that and he's happy with it, and he's just so good.
It's a very reliable, isn't it? The you know, off the tee, you know, I know we talk about, you know, Rory's length, for example, and you know how good Rory can be off the tee, but actually, when things, I think a lot more can go wrong for him, can't they? Whereas John Rahm just seems to be, you know,
when you saw Rahm hit a few of those draws that he's been working on, particularly the one at 13 springs to mind, where he's hit that huge draw around the corner there, he's got about 320 and left himself a 6-iron in. I mean, that's an easy shot to kind of hit too straight if you don't commit to it. Do you know what I mean? And he could all of a sudden be up the hill on the right hand side there with not a very good lie and a good shot, but no, he commits to it, gets the face rolling over, hits that nice draw around the corner, and almost, I mean, for me, that was the shot that put Brooks to bed, really, just that absolute rip straight around the corner there on 13. But yeah, I mean, it was a great watch over the 4 days, and there's obviously some other great stories which we'll talk about to come out of this year's Masters. But I mean, it's always a tournament that kind of throws up some, you know, some great performances from people you weren't expecting, and that kind of brings me on a little bit to Phil Mickelson, I suppose. So I don't know if you watched much of Phil yesterday.
I watched
very,
the coverage.
Very impressed with him and his interview afterwards, where he said he'd been working a lot of stuff in the off season and putting in a lot of hours, and he certainly looks very fit and healthy and looks to be swinging it fantastically well. You know, very, very much kind of, you know, back to almost what he was like probably 10 years ago. And he kind of takes offence to people mentioning that he's 52 years old, you know what I mean? Because he doesn't feel that way, and he certainly doesn't swing and play that way. So, yeah, I mean, it was an impressive performance, I thought, from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, he's, you know, he's got a track record at that golf course to start off with. And, you know, it's not one that many first-time You know, you see many first time winners, you know, winning their on their first visit, I should say. You know, so the more rounds at Augusta National you've got under your belt, the better. You know, he's had of this generation, he's had probably one of the best short games there's been. And like you say, for a guy who's, you know, in his 50s, he can still whack it out there, right?
Oh, so absolutely,
yeah, you know, he's got all the components there, and like we saw on Sunday, if he's you know, hitting it close and he's holding putts, then he's never going to be too far away. He's, you know,
and his playing partner Jordan Spieth was pretty good as well, wasn't he? I mean, it was literally a birdie blitz from the pair of them. I went through their scorecards just before we started this, and do you know what they shot better ball?
It was past 72, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to say probably a 61,
62.
58. Wow.
That's so crazy. There was 7 under both nines. So a nice even 7 under, 7 under. So Spieth basically birdied pretty much every hole that Mickelson bogeyed and vice versa. So it was impressive to say the least. I mean, that both of them would have been... they're both pretty pumped, and I thought for 1 minute, you know, Phil was gonna really push Brooks and John Rahm, really. But
you know, I always felt like it was
and kind of, you know, and waited for them. But yeah, Rahm was just too good at the end of the day.
Yeah, I always felt like Mickelson and Spieth, they had finished quite a long time before the final group. So I always felt like even if they posted a number that was maybe one or two better than what they did, I always felt like it wasn't quite enough. I almost felt like they were going to run out of holes, even though they were just on this absolute blitz of birdies.
Yeah, I always just think that finish at Augusta, like particularly 17 and 18, you could double bogey both of them quite easily, without really doing anything particularly wrong.
It's probably easier to make a double bogey there if you've got a one-shot lead.
Yeah.
Over maybe a three or four-shot lead, that's for sure. But I've got another stat for you, talking about Phil Mickelson.
Okay.
So he, because he finished in a tie for second, he now has actually won. He's the highest earner ever at the Masters. He overtook Tiger Woods. So even though Tiger's obviously won the Masters five times. And Phil hasn't won it five times. Phil's won it three times. His overall record means that, he's now the highest ever earning golfer at Augusta National.
And talking of Tiger, right? So we're talking about two guys who are getting on in years, golf-wise, I suppose, at 52, and Tiger in his sort of mid-40s. Very stark contrast to the two of them in terms of how they finished the tournament this week. I mean, what's your take on Tiger's kind of withdrawal?
What didn't help him was the temperature, the cold. I don't know too much about the injuries. He didn't look good.
It's plantar fasciitis that he's got, which I've had before, and it is painful. Mm. But I can only assume it is as a result of having half a leg missing.
It's a demanding walk, right? Everyone will tell you that when you go there, the undulations.
I've never been to Augusta, but everyone that's been that I know says you just cannot understand how undulating that golf course is. And it's going to be a trek. And when it's wet and windy and horrible, it's going to be even more of a trek, isn't it? I think Joe LeCarver, his caddy, basically said if Tiger could use a buggy, he'd be up in the top five. Do you know what I mean? He's just every single... some of the Sky coverage we'll get onto that in a bit, but they were talking to Butch Harmon for quite a long time, and he was saying that he spent quite a while with Tiger before the first round and was talking to him and almost sort of said, well, how is your leg kind of thing? And he sort of said, every single step hurts. And when you're making thousands of steps in 18 holes and trying to walk, you know, pretty much, it's not just the distance, but the elevation changes around there. You're walking sort of 7-8 miles and probably feels like 15 miles because of the elevation. That's going to hurt. Do you know what I mean? And that's my only worry with with Tiger. I want to see him play a lot more, and I think his golf swing looks awesome, and his actual golf game looked great. But the pain he must be in worries me, because, you know, we all want to see him play for longer. He's definitely got the game to play for longer, but will his body let him do it? That's the issue.
That, do you know, there's a couple of things for me. So firstly, I'm with you, obviously. I'd love to see him play for as long as possible, but I don't want to see him like that. I think of, you know, his own physical well-being, his mental well-being. You know, he's got children. You know, I'd hate to see him get to a point where he physically, you know, just can't move. But, you know, it was a strange thought for me, because I thought back to last year's Masters at the start of last year, when we had the ceremonial tee shot. And I remember watching Jack Nicklaus, and I remember thinking, this guy doesn't look good. He's not moving very well. Obviously, he's a lot older. He's, you know. And I thought to myself, this year, Tiger looked worse than what Jack Nicklaus did in terms of how he was able to move around. Yeah. And that was quite damning for me, because I thought to myself last year, you know, we're not going to see Jack Nicklaus for much longer. You know, he can barely get up and down to tee the ball up. You know, he was walking very, very slowly. I look at Tiger and I thought, you know, he's probably in a worse state now than what Jack Nicklaus is. And
I still think, I mean, from the accident he's had, he's still not far away from it in terms of his recovery either. Do you know what I mean? I think he could still improve. I mean, plantar fasciitis is something that, you know, with the right kind of treatment and sort of stretching and things like that, can massively improve that. But I think it definitely comes as a result of your calf either not being strong enough or maybe not even having some of it there. So, I mean, I would guess some of his calf had to be removed from when he's had that operation and his accident. But there must be ways of,
I mean,
alleviating that pain somehow. Because when he swings a golf club, he still looks awesome. And it looks powerful, and it looks balanced, and it looks great. It's just walking between the shots that's the problem.
He's in a position to be able to afford the best medical care. He's got, you know, as much time as he wants in terms of, you know, resting and rehab. But I think if there was anything more that he could be doing, he would be doing it. Yeah. But like you, I think that it's probably a lot more to it than what meets the eye in terms of, you know, what is there and what isn't there as far as his leg's concerned. And once that happens, I'm afraid for me, it's almost, that is an option. The problem you do that is, you know, where do you draw the line then?
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for us as fans to say, yeah, but he's Tiger Woods, he should be able to do what he wants. But not everyone's a Tiger Woods fan. Not everybody, you know. Look, you maybe draw comparisons to someone like John Daly, you know, a guy that's, you know, been quite open about smoking and drinking his whole career. You know, maybe not looked after himself as much as other people have. Then all of a sudden, should he be allowed in a buggy? And, you know, you're opening up a can of worms there. But yeah, it would be. You know, it would be good. It would be interesting to see now when we see him again.
Yeah, I think, you know, he said in the past that potentially he only wants to play about 6 tournaments a year anyway. So the 4 majors and a couple of others, I'd guess Riviera is probably one that he absolutely loves playing and he wants to play there. But
I think we'll see him at the Open this year.
Oh, I do. And I think Hoylake's definitely a much easier walk, isn't it? You know,
anything that's, in theory, there's not many courses I can think of on the road that would be hilly in, you know, I mean, especially compared to Augusta, for example.
The toughest test, isn't it?
Yeah. But I'm talking, you know, on the Open rota, you know, even if he was to come back and play the Open every year, you know, he's not going to get anything even close to that, that physical demand that someone like Augusta puts on you.
No, he's not. I mean, Portrush should probably be the one that's probably a bit of a trek, but yeah, the ones over here in England and in Scotland don't really require too much. But again, it's weather dependent, isn't it? If you get a nice hot summer and the ball's going miles and it's, you know, it might feel quite easy for him.
Yeah.
If it's cold and wet and windy and horrible, it might not feel quite so easy. But yeah, you know, me and you, obviously, clearly Tiger Woods fans. I want to see as much of him as possible. I want to see him win again. I want, you know, but it kind of left me sort of thinking, you know, is that ever going to happen? And who knows? Who knows? He might surprise us all. He has done so many times in the past. And
I just don't want it to become like a token appearance. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think he wants that either. I think I think he's fairly realistic with himself. If he doesn't think he can compete, he won't. I think he's still hitting the ball and scoring well enough that he can compete. I think that's his frustration, that he just can't walk. Whereas, you know, you go back to Nicklaus, he just can't hit the ball far enough to compete. And you look at people like Sandy Lyle, who's bowed out at the Masters this week. Unbelievable golfer, by the way. And, you know, probably one of the most talented that we've seen in the last 50 years in Europe. And certainly that famous quote Seve said, that if everyone played their best in Europe, Sandy Lyle would win and I'd come second. I mean, is as good a compliment as you can give somebody. And he himself is just not long enough to compete anymore. Tiger definitely is. And, you know, I just think it's that fitness thing. If he can get back to that, you never know what can happen. And like I say, fingers crossed that happens and he does compete again, he plays again, and me and you are kind of going crazy about how phenomenal he is and how superhuman he is. But who knows? But yeah, let's hope.
If anyone can, Tiger can.
Of course he can. Absolutely. He's a superhero.
Yeah. I've got one more. I'm sorry to jump back, because I did want to share with this one more quite shocking Phil Mickelson stat that I've seen online. So it was Shane Bacon and then the No Laying Up guys that shared this one. So Phil Mickelson's first top 10 in a major was at the 1993 PGA Championships. So with a top 10, Phil Mickelson, that was. With a top 10 to at the Masters this year, that's a gap of 29 and a half years between his first and his last top 10 in a major. And then No Laying Up added to this, saying, just imagine that's like John Rahm finishing in the top 10 in the 2047 Masters.
Yeah.
Crazy, that, isn't it?
Yeah, that is bonkers, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There we go.
So we've spoken about Rahm and how amazing he is and how great it is to see him win a green jacket, get back to world number one. And, I mean, he's had the greatest start to a year that probably anyone's ever had, other than maybe Scheffler last year. But, yeah, let's talk a little bit about Brooks, okay? Because he, for two rounds, looked like the most comfortable person at Augusta, looked like it was coming fairly easy to him, looked like he'd got the bit between his teeth, and kind of Major Brooks was back again, and it looked like it was almost a foregone conclusion. But like we spoke about earlier, kind of lost his game a little bit. What's your take on that, Matt?
Do you know what? Firstly, it was good to see Brooks Koepka at the top of a leaderboard. It was good to see him playing with that little bit of confidence. It would be easy for me, sat on my dining room chair in me socks and me sliders, to sit here and say that the occasion got the better of him, perhaps. You know, it obviously means a lot to him. I don't know how damaging the third round would have been to him, because, you know, there's only, I think I might be right in saying there's only one player that's ever shot four rounds in the 60s at Augusta, and that was Cam Smith, and he didn't even win that year. So you know that you're going to get a bad round coming. So when he starts like he started and then he shot over par in the third round, I wonder if that third round kind of knocked the momentum out of him a little bit. And then when you add that to, you know, John Rahm playing steady in the final round, when it was almost like this head-to-head, this match play, there was something Brooks Koepka did at the start of the week, and he said he went out for a practice round with Murray McIlroy because he wanted to see how his game compared to Rory. I think he used the term, I want to see how my game compares to these guys. And I thought that was quite telling for Brooks, because he obviously is looking up to these guys now, thinking that's the benchmark. Whereas he used to think, he was the benchmark. He didn't used to think he was the benchmark for a 2-year period. He was the benchmark. And I think he's almost convinced himself that he isn't the benchmark anymore. And I think it would have been easy to kind of maybe get a bit carried away in your own head after starting really well.
In the Full Swing document.
Yeah. There was a lot of that in there as well.
There was a lot of self-doubt there. There was a lot of stuff that kind of was clouding his thought process and maybe not allowing him to play his best golf.
But it can take a long time to build confidence up, and it can be lost very, very quickly.
When you say these guys, I mean, I'm assuming he meant, you know, PGA Tour players.
Well, I almost didn't want to go down that route of kind of, you know, PGA Tour and LIV. I just think that he's looking at Jon Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, I guess when he's not playing against those guys week in, week out, it's difficult to know where you're at. But, I mean, if you're winning, you know, he won the week before, obviously, at Orange County National, played some good golf there. And we spoke about this last week on the podcast. He looked pretty much back to where he was. I think this week he's just, you know, Augusta National is a very tough golf course, and to play well four times around it is very hard. And he's played well 3.5 times around it, or 2.5 times around it probably, and been beaten by probably the best player. Well, let's face it, probably over the last 6 or 7 years, Jon Rahm's probably the best player in the world, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? He's literally just knocking off wins left, right, and centre. And
well, it's easy to forget this guy's won 3-4 times this year already.
Yeah. This is his fourth, isn't it? Yeah.
I think so. I don't know if this is his fourth now or his fifth, but yeah, he's won multiple times in this year, and we're only, it's the 10th of April.
Yeah. I think I saw a stat earlier, he's won 7 of his last 13 starts, or 6 of his last 13 starts, something like that, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's half the tournaments he's entered.
Yeah. No, it's great. And, you know, there was always this other piece around, you know, when you make your mistakes. And, you know, look, Jon Rahm four-putted the very first green on Thursday morning when he went out for his first round, and he, you know, made a double bogey on the very first hole of the event, and then, you know, went on to shoot a 65.
Do you know who the last person was to double the first in a major and win?
I don't.
It's an obscure one. It's Lucas Glover.
Really?
When he won the US Open, yeah.
Good stat.
Yeah. That's it's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, so look, Brooks will take a lot of heart. I know there's rumours that he, you know, rumours here say on social media that he would like to come back to the PGA Tour.
They sort of said, if you were playing at the level you are now, would your decision to have joined LIV been more difficult? And you know, fair play to him. He said, yeah, it would. Do you know what I mean? I thought maybe I wasn't going to get back to this level again. I'm back again, and who knows? But I still think there is going to be a conversation between the two at some point, and they're going to come to some sort of agreement that players can play in certain events and stuff like that. I think that is going to happen, and it should happen, absolutely, because we want to see Brooks Koepka playing more golf. We want to see DJ. We want to see Cam Smith. We want to see, some of us want to see Patrick Reed. We want to see Mickelson. Do you know what I mean? We want to see Sergio. And you know, these guys are fantastic golfers. Joachim Niemann as well did all right as well this week. So, I mean, it's silly to think that we're not going to see these guys more often than we are. But, yeah, I mean, the way things are at the moment, it's obviously quite difficult, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, it was good to see Brooks playing well. It was good to see him hit the ball well. And, yeah, but for just a little bit of a cold spell for, you know, across the third and fourth round, who knows? He might have done all right. But, I mean, he's missed the cut the last two times he's played there because of, you know, his injuries that he's had and stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to chuck another name at you. I mean, we could do this and just have a quick, very brief discussion. But Victor Hovland.
Yep.
Another event where he's put himself in a pretty good position, and then just kind of faded on the final round. Not the first time he's done that.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised when it's taken him 4.5 hours to play in the two ball with Patrick Cantlay, who's literally taking forever on every shot. Mm-hmm. I don't blame the guy. I mean, that would literally boil my blood playing with someone like that, because I would literally walk up to him after about three holes, grab him by the scruff of his neck, give him a good shake, and if he didn't get quicker, I'd probably drown him in Rays Creek. Yeah. But yeah, he... It's unacceptable, and that is detrimental to someone like Victor Hovland, who is a quick player. And so, Rahm and Brooks, I think, would have been... I think if no one else is on the golf course, those two would have been done in 3 hours.
Yeah.
And probably Hovland playing with them as well. But like Cantlay just ruin it for everyone. And to be honest, as much of an absolute sensation as he's been this week, Sam Bennett's the same. My God, that guy's slow. He takes forever on every shot that he hits. And yes, he's been fantastic this week. Absolute breath of fresh air as an amateur, doing as well as he's done. Fantastic golfer. You don't have to take that long. I get that he's nervous. I get it's a major. I get that, it's the first time he's experienced stuff like this. But for God's sake, mate, you know what club you're going to hit. Probably walking up to the shot, let alone, reading a putt from 100 different angles and then missing it, just get on with it.
Yeah. So he was the next one I was going to mention, actually, because it was a really good story.
Amazing. Unbelievable story.
Yeah.
And losing his dad the way he did and the sort of mantra that he's got now with, the tattoo that he's got on his forearm and basically don't wait to do something is what it says on his forearm, unless any of you have not heard that. And obviously it's a traumatic time in his life that's kind of fueled his golf. But I mean, the guy is phenomenally talented and we are going to see a lot of him in the future because he's so good. But he needs to bloody quicken up.
Yeah. And I'm sure, I would almost give him, as an amateur, I'd almost give him a bit of a pass in his first Masters.
I'm not giving Patrick Cantlay one.
I'm absolutely not giving Patrick Cantlay a pass. Absolutely not.
He's infuriated me for about the last 5 years, really.
Yeah. I think, I'm sure that all it takes is for someone to get hold of this guy and say, look, mate, you've got a bright fruit tree in front of you. Everybody was really impressed with the way you've played, but you've got to pick it up. You've got to pick the pace up a little bit, because the last thing you want to do is you don't want to be turning professional, which you might well do now, and already have a reputation of being somebody that's going to slow everybody else down.
I guess I don't know what the connotations of him turning pro are, because I guess as the US amateur champion, he probably plays in all but the PGA. He probably plays in the other two majors this year, doesn't he? So
But I'm sure, do they not let them play in it even if they were to turn professional?
I don't know. I don't know what the rules are, but
I'm not sure. I know one of the majors changed the rules to say, because they were almost holding off on their career to have these spots in these events, and it just didn't seem quite right because they'd already earned the spots.
Because they can't earn any money, can they?
Yeah.
I think that was very detrimental to Hovland. Playing with Cantlay.
Yeah.
And you saw, there's clips flying around social media of him kind of walking off very quickly or even playing before Cantlay got to the green on a few holes and stuff like that. And fair play to him. I mean, which player was it, a Chinese amateur a few years ago that literally got...
It was a young lad.
About 15, 16 years old.
He was 13. And they done him for slow play. He was the only person that had ever been warned or put on the clock, and he was, a 13-year-old kid.
Do you think it's because it's Patrick Cantlay that he hasn't got
done? I don't know. I do hope not. Right, just going to chuck a couple of other names at you, and just no need to have massive conversations about these names, but who do I want to talk to?
Do you want one word about them?
Not one word. Fred Couples.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
One word.
Unbelievable. Who else did I want to... Jason Day. Was going very, very well until a final round 80.
Yeah, I'd say disappointing is what I would say, because for... Well, to be honest, the coverage I saw of him, He was very good. And it's obviously a golf course he likes, and he's done well at in the past. His game seems to have kind of, he seems to be in a bit of a resurgence at the moment, where he's playing quite nicely. And you're seeing him on leaderboards again. You know, a lot of people have forgotten Jason Day even exists. But yeah, he's been doing really, really well. And I hope that continues, because he's a great guy to watch. Phenomenal putter, hits the ball great. Again, he's almost a Rahm-esque in the way that he really does give it a shift, doesn't he? Absolutely rips it.
I had a couple of quid on him, and I had each way places.
That was a sick enough one.
Well, obviously, I didn't see too much of him on the coverage because he was dropping down the leaderboard. But he started the final round at 3 under. He was 3 under.
Yeah.
And then I kept getting these pop-ups on the app. Jason Day's made a bogey on the ninth hole. Double bogey on the ninth. Jason Day's made a double bogey on the 10th. Jason Day's made a double bogey on 12. Jason Day's made a double bogey on 13.
Which point you went to bed?
And I'm sitting there thinking that can't be right. That must be a glitch. But no, he drops.
You know what? I was a bit the same. I put some money on Justin Rose, and after you last week saying how good Sungjae Im was, I put a little bit on him as well.
Well, he nearly did okay.
Well, so did Rose, but they both finished tied. I think on the betting site I used, it was top 12, and I think they both tied for about 18th or something like that. So they're just
16th.
Speed was my only person who picked me up a few quid. Rory, obviously, bombed out.
That was the next name, because I'll be honest, that was a shock.
Well, if you ask me for one word about Rory, I don't think I can say it on this podcast, to be honest.
Not very good. No. Also, Will Zalatoris. Hit the ball.
I mean, he's awesome, and I really wanted. I thought he was going to have a massive year this year, you know, and having to have another op and miss the rest of the season is horrible. And we all hope that, Will, you won't be listening, but I hope you are. And we want you to get back playing golf again and hopefully contending in majors very, very quickly. But yeah, it's a bit of a sickener that for him, isn't it?
Yeah. That was it. That was
I think the takeaways from this Masters, I mean, the Masters is a bit of an anomaly because it's a restricted field, and obviously you've got, there's probably 20 guys straight away that you can look at and go, well, they ain't going to win. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so really that's 60 guys really playing for a green jacket, isn't it? And it's a bit of a strange tournament in that it does throw up these stories like Fred Couples making the cut and like, you know, Bernard Langer in the past doing the same at the age that they are, and people like Mickelson shooting low ones and past champions doing well and stuff. And like you say, it all does come down to experience on the golf course and people who know the course inside out. And it is a bit of a funny one that way. But, you know, John Rahm, amazing performance. He's a player that I'd struggle to find anyone who doesn't like John Rahm and doesn't follow John Rahm and doesn't wish him well, because he just seems, like you said before, just the ultimate professional, really nice guy, family man. He's got two kids, his wife there, and just loving life, really. And yeah, fair play to him, and he's world number one. And who knows, he could win a hell of a lot more this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. He also seems to have got a game that kind of holds up in all types of golf as well, doesn't it? Like, you know, if he went and won the Open this year, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Oh, not at all. I mean, you know, last time it was at Hoylake, Rory won it as well, didn't he? So, I mean, it depends on the weather. I think it tends to suit that player who does probably bomb it, because the last two winners have been Rory and Tiger. You know, DJ did well, I think, when Rory was there as well, and Ricky Fowler did okay as well, didn't they? So, I mean, I would expect it to be someone who shifts it that does well. But, you know, remember when Tiger won, it was burnt to death and he didn't hit a driver for 4 rounds, did he? No. So, it could be very, very different. But, you know, and coming on to that, I suppose, this week on the PGA Tour is another golf course that kind of suits very different types of golfer as well. So we're over at Harbour Town. So we've gone from Georgia down, is it down? No, it's not. It's across, isn't it? Or up to Carolina, to Harbour Town. And, you know, a golf course that tends to suit that type of player who is very accurate. The greens are quite small, can get very windy. Have you had a bit, and it's an elevated event as well. Let's talk about that too, because normally the week after the Masters is a bit of a and it's a bit of a throwaway event that no one plays in, and a, you know, a weak field, but this week couldn't be any better from that.
It's normally, historically, it's normally where Stuart Sink plays well the week after the Masters.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's won there a few times, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has.
And I think Davis Love back in the day as well. So yeah, you know, two guys there that aren't necessarily the longest. And Luke Donald's done really well there quite a few times as well. So
the difference is now, as you said, with it being an elevated event or a designated event, you've got John Rahm, you've got Scotty Scheffler, you've got your mate Cantlay, you've got Scheffler, you've got Max Homa, you've got Hovland, Burns, Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Cameron Young, Tony Finau, and then you get to the winner this week, Jordan Spieth.
You reckon?
Yes. Yeah, he's won around there before.
I reckon Fitzpatrick as well. Them two for me.
Yeah.
It's Fitzpatrick's favourite golf course. I think he even still has some Harbour Town head covers on his bag, as well as his Sheffield United ones that he has. But, I think him. I think just players who tend to be very accurate and hit lots of greens in reg. So, yeah, I mean, there's a few that you can think of. I mean, Rahm would be one that springs out straight. I don't know if he'll be sober this week. So,
well, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, how much does it take out of you normally to win back to back events is hard enough, let alone when it's
a major and one that you've had to come off the golf course twice for, and yeah, exactly, a bit of a battle. I don't want to count John Rahm out because I think you do that at your peril. But I would say this week we'll let him miss a cut.
We'll let him off
early and spend some time with his family.
I think so. Obviously, I don't know if you've seen today, but Rory has withdrawn from the event.
Oh, really?
So that will, because Why? He's already missed, because he's already missed one of the designated events.
Yeah.
That may affect his PIP payment at the end of the year, because you're supposed to not miss more than one. Don't know the reasons behind him withdrawing. He's not said, he's just
embarrassment.
I don't know if it's embarrassment. I think he just needs to. I actually think he needs to hide away for a few weeks and just
do a rocket, get in the gym, and
basically, yeah, go back to your roots, mate. Punch some raw meat hanging up or something.
Yeah, come on, Rory.
Yeah,
you're better than this, mate.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I quite like Jordan Spieth this week. He, you know, it'll take the momentum
I think, particularly the way he finished.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's obviously a hell of a golfer, great putter, a guy who can be a bit kind of wayward off the tee at times, but generally a pretty decent iron player, very good short game, and puts like God. So, yeah, I mean, and obviously he won last year. So, yeah, potentially he's someone who could do very, very well. I just think I've got a weird feeling about Fitzpatrick. I just hope he does really well. And my other one, who is a player I absolutely love, is Christian Bezaden, how he's playing.
Yeah, I thought you were going to mention him.
Great in the wind if it gets windy around there. Very accurate. Not the longest guy in the world. Hits lots of greens and puts fantastically well as well.
Yeah. But do you know what? So normally in the past, you have your major, you have the Masters, and then maybe, you know, everybody kind of disappears for a few weeks. And I love the fact that we're going straight back into an event where all of these guys are playing again.
Yeah, me too. Particularly, it's a week where we've got no DP World Tour to talk about as well. So they're not back until next week. And in Japan as well, which is random, but hopefully we're going to see some good golf again.
Yeah, speaking of good golf,
yes,
ask me how many
I've
birdies
got some
I
more
made
good
on
golf
Saturday.
To talk to you about in a second, but yeah, go on,
ask me how many birdies I made on Saturday.
If I'm honest, I'm not bothered, but come on, tell me.
Wow, that's harsh.
I'm being honest, Matt.
Just the four birdies on Saturday.
I thought you were gonna say like nine or something.
Right, no, okay. No, I don't. I don't make nine in a round. No.
All right. So you've had four birdies. What did you shoot?
What did I shoot? Five over, I think.
Right. Tail of two arms, was it, or what?
No, do you know what? It was just I made three twos on a day where there was no comp.
I saw that, actually.
You there was no...
And there was no
competition, so there was awesome. No twos. The double bogey. So I made par on. We got five par threes, birdied three of them, double bogeyed one, and then bogeyed the other. But the one I double bogeyed is nearly 250 yards. But it's early in the season. It's signs. I've had a good weekend on the golf course. I shot 5 over and 6 over Saturday and Sunday. I'm happy. New irons are here and working well.
Oh, yeah. How are they going, those new clubs? Are they all right?
Yeah, they're nice. They're very nice. You make 3-2s. You're hitting your irons pretty well, right? That's... Yeah, and I use Arcos to track my strokes gains stats. So that's always quite handy when you're making equipment change. Very rare do I gain strokes with my approach play. And I think a lot of that is sometimes to do with the fact that off the tee has always been a weakness of mine. And then that obviously puts a bit of pressure on your approach play. But yeah, I actually gained four shots on approach on Saturday, which was really pleasing for me personally. It was not often I see that.
Right. Well, I'm going to talk to you about birdies in a second, because we've obviously the DP World Tour's had a few weeks off. Two of the guys we have from Howley, Dan Gavins, Marcus Armitage, have been back home for a few weeks, and there's a sort of satellite tour running around here, ITS Tour, 2020 Pro Tour that runs up in the north of England here. And there was an event at Huddersfield Golf Club, which is called Fixby, near us, which Dan Gavins won the other day. Do you want to know what he shot?
Did he not shoot 9 under?
10.
10.
He had 8 birdies and an eagle in 18 holes. That's some golf.
That is.
Doesn't matter different. What course you're playing. But, I mean, Fixby, I've played it before, and it's can be tough in the wind. It's a fairly exposed golf course near Huddersfield, and yeah, it can get very, very windy. But yeah, 10 under is a score I couldn't ever see myself shooting around there, put it that way. But hell of a score from Dan, and hopefully he takes that to Japan with him next week when he starts again on the DP World Tour. Marcus played okay as well, so he had a fairly decent score, so hopefully he'll take that with him as well. We'll obviously talk more about that event on next week's podcast. But yeah, I think a lot of us can't wait for the DP World Tour to come back. But the fact that it's in Japan just means it's going to be on a horrible time of day, and probably not many people are going to watch it. And in terms of coverage for the Masters, then, is there anything? Did you like the coverage that we got? Were you unhappy with the coverage that we got? I saw a few things that you'd said yesterday about that, so I just thought you'd want to expand on it a little bit.
Yeah, I can expand on it. So the tweet was around... I'm a big fan of Sky Sports. I'm a big fan of what they do for golf. I think they're very forward-thinking. I do use social media a lot while I'm watching the golf, and I see people moaning about the coverage, moaning about the ad breaks, moaning about presenters. And for this week, for example, I'll show this person, show that person. And what people really need to understand is that Sky Sports do not control the coverage. Normally, especially when you've got an event like the Masters, so Augusta National control that coverage. And then they will give it out to the American broadcasters. And then Sky take it from those guys. So it's not even as if it's... Sky cameras that are on mounts and cranes following balls and stuff. It's crazy. But I think Sky do a great job. Nick Doherty, for example, I think is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, Nick Faldo was brilliant this week when they brought him in.
Yeah, I think Faldo's awesome. He's really good. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously someone who's pretty much retired from doing that kind of job now. But, I mean, to have him there.
The insight.
Which is awesome as well.
Yeah, and look, I think... Butch is, whilst I do think he's getting on a bit, he adds so much value when he comes in. I think
he just knows all the players, doesn't he? And
yes.
If he doesn't, his son does. So
he
kind of knows what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And then I know that you've got some of the other guys, and two that I'll name that probably divide a lot of opinion on social media is Paul McGinley and Laura Davis. You know, I see a lot of negativity towards those guys, and some of it I think is maybe just, some of it maybe not so much. I mean, look, these guys are doing what I think is quite a difficult job as it is. The issue that I have, right, is that I look at Sky and they've got, as I said in my tweet, people like Sophie Walker, who I think is brilliant, Zane Scotland, who I think speaks and comes across so well. He goes on the Sky Sports Golf podcast quite a bit, and his knowledge on the game, equipment, you know, just golf swing is really, really top-notch. You've got people like John Morgan, who people love. And I think it would be great to see some of these guys given an opportunity at some of these bigger events instead of sticking with the kind of tried and tested people. So that was my gripe with it. You know, I'll be honest, by the time the coverage finished yesterday, personally, I'd heard enough of Paul McGinley. I just think sometimes certain people like to talk for the sake of talking, and he might be one of them.
I mean, to some extent, I kind of feel for him a bit where he's having to fill time a lot of the time. So he does repeat himself a lot, and he does come out with stuff that, you know, is a bit cringe sometimes. But I kind of feel for him a bit in the fact that he's, you know, sometimes they do, like you say, because they're kind of, they're getting the feed from, is it like CBS or the Golf Channel?
Yeah, yeah.
One person I thought they missed this week because one of the US networks was using her is Iona. I thought she's great.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was CBS that were using that she'd got a job with this week, and that's a massive ball drop from Sky, in my opinion, because she's really good.
Yeah. And look, Sarah Stark does great with the players' interviews.
Yeah, she's good. I thought the interviews there were great in the clubhouse. Yeah.
Yeah,
I know what you say. I mean, you know, all of us these days are part of different group chats on WhatsApp and stuff like that. And yeah, the general consensus from the ones I'm part of is that yeah, McGinley's fairly annoying. But you can't take anything away from him as a golfer because he's awesome, and you know what he's achieved is amazing. But that doesn't mean you're really good at that.
I did have one guy replied to a couple of my tweets yesterday saying, you know, but these guys, you know, the ones that I've mentioned, they've never won anything. They've never won majors. So what do they know? And I was like, well, you know, if that argument, Paul McGinley's, you know, not won a major, and Paul McGinley only played at Augusta twice. And one of those times he missed the cut, and that was 20 years ago. And I just think as the game evolves and the game moves on, I think the younger guys that have maybe recently stopped playing are just a lot more in touch and up to date with.
I think Nick's a perfect example of someone who's come out of the game fairly young, isn't he? But golf's one of those sports where if you're really good, you tend to stay in it well into your 50s, don't you? So, I mean, it's difficult to get. I think Rich Beam's awesome. Like, I love listening to him.
Rich Beam. Radar is another one who's great. Ewan Murray's great.
And he divides opinion a lot, Radar. Some people love him, some people absolutely can't stand him. But, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? You're never going to like everybody. But I think generally everyone loves Nick. They like Sarah. They like Iona. They like.
I think maybe the other thing is as well where, you know, I think on the PGA Tour in particular, we have McGinley, almost feels like we have him every week. So if you're watching golf every week, you're hearing Paul McGinley every week. And I think that doesn't do him any types of favours. You know, like I say, you know, somebody said, okay, so if you bought, you know, I don't know, Zane Scotland and Sophie Walker in, who would you get rid of? And I was like, well, I'm not necessarily saying that I would get rid of anybody. I'm just saying, you know,
I don't think you need to. I think the coverage would just get better because you look at what it was like at the Open last year. They had like every man and his dog presenting stuff, didn't they? They had.
Yeah. Well, they definitely need to do that at the Open because you're getting a lot more golfers. There's a lot more airtime.
And they're in charge of the coverage, Sky, aren't they?
Yes.
So they've got more. Yeah, of course. Which is great. I mean, you probably had upwards of 25 presenters there at the.
Yeah.
You know, they had Di Doherty, didn't they, in there? And they had.
Incy.
didn't see Peter Finch, I think, did some stuff for him as well last year.
Yeah, would have done some social stuff.
Had George, forgive me, George,
Harper,
new surname, but the New Zealand lad.
Harping on.
As well.
George
yeah.
Harper.
Harper, that's him. He's fantastic. Really like him. They've got quite a lot of talented presenters that they can use.
Yeah, they have.
Hopefully we'll see, you know, the Open will be brilliant again. But yeah, there was quite a few people actually that were not very happy with the Sky coverage. And to be honest, some of it was just them talking a lot. But I think some of it is down to the fact that the US feed that they get is not very good. So
yeah, no, it's not. It's not Sky's fault that there's too much studio.
Moving on from coverage then, Matt, what are you doing this week?
I don't know, you know. I don't know. So we're still at Easter holidays this week. So not going to do too much. Not this weekend. I'll try and get a game in at some point this week. As things stand, I don't know where it's coming from. But I've literally, like last week, I played 4 times in 7 days last week. Because I had my spring open at Thetford on Thursday.
I played times in 7 days last week.
No, that doesn't surprise me. You're still scared of the cold.
Yeah, I'm scared of the cold, mate.
Scared of the cold. Big, tough northerner like you. What do you do? You're playing your rugby there?
Yep.
Talk to me about your rugby, because do you go out and play that in the cold?
Yeah, and the mud. And yeah, it was... I mean, I've spoke to you about this before the podcast, but... having never played rugby in my entire life, by the way, I've played it at school in games or PE afternoon that you had in secondary school. I've literally done a couple of sessions there when I was about 14 years old, but never, ever been on a rugby pitch and played a game in my entire life. And for some reason decided that it'd be a good idea to start playing. So I've been to one touch and pass session, which was fairly tame. You know, it was, I don't know the rules, I don't know what I'm doing, but basically just get the ball, run forward as much as you can until someone touches you, and then you have to kind of roll it under your foot and give it to somebody else. Fine. But then I've been away a little bit in the last month and playing in pro-ams and various stuff, and came back and sort of texted the guy who runs the group and said, oh, is there a session on this week? And he said, yeah, but it's full contact, under floodlights, 7 o'clock kickoff, Friday night, are you playing? So I said, yeah, go on then. I played my first ever full contact rugby match a week and a half ago, and that was after one touch and pass session. And let me tell you, it was brutal.
I can imagine. It's not for me,
brutal enough to put me off, because I'm playing again this Friday.
Full contact again.
Yeah, I actually really liked it. It's very different to golf. Obviously, the team dynamic is... you know, something that you don't get in golf at all. So, you know, I'm obviously play golf professionally, and it's kind of all about you and what you're doing, and you've got to kind of motivate yourself. But that whole team dynamic and team environment, being in the changing room with a bunch of guys I'd never met, literally never met anybody. There was one guy that I knew from the touch and pass session that I went to, but that was it. And it was like, yeah, what position do you play? I said, absolutely no idea. Don't know. Yeah, just got kind of put in there, and I played for about 45 minutes of the 80. So it was good. Enjoyed it. I was covered in mud, covered in bruises, and it was tough. But yeah, very, very good.
Interesting.
Very different.
I can imagine.
But yeah, I can report back next Monday on how I feel after playing again this Friday night. And yeah, fingers crossed I don't have as many bruises as I did last time.
No. Do you know what I've just looked at while I'm listening to a rugby story and I'm thinking about when I'm going to play golf next? I'm not going to lie. The weather doesn't look great this week, but I've just checked week's weather. I've got Monday, and I know I don't normally check the weather this far in advance, right? But I've got Monday the 17th, 16 degrees and sunny. Tuesday the 18th, 17 degrees and sunny. Wednesday the 19th, 16. Thursday the 20th, 16. Friday the 21st, 16. 15-15 over the weekend. I tell you what, the shorts are going to make an appearance next week. I can feel it.
Yeah, watch out, everyone. See your legs, Jesus.
Because once the trousers go, they go. They don't come back out until October.
Well, we've got our captain's drive-in on Sunday, actually, so I'm hoping the weather's going to be quite nice for that, because Jamie, who's going to be our captain for this year, really, really nice guy, and can't wait for him to have a great captain's year because he's an absolutely top lad. And again, he's one of the reasons I got into playing rugby as well, because he's fairly high up at Morley Rugby Club and been involved there for a long time. So yeah, it's his fault that I'm getting battered every week. But yeah, I'm hoping he's going to have a great captain's year. And yeah, that's part of my job on Sunday morning to see him drive off.
Nice. Well, good luck to him.
Yeah, other than that, that's what I'm doing this week. Got lots of lessons in. Captain's driving on Sunday, rugby on Friday night. And yeah, everyone, pray for me.
Pray for Ryan. Right.
Indeed.
We wrap that up, shall we? Matt,
and we'll speak again next week. I'm sure we'll keep in touch over the next 7 days about what we're up to on the golf course. But yeah, thanks again for everyone for listening. And I'll see you next Monday.